Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
You are very welcome along to the Keith Andrews Show. We've got a busy show for you today. We're going to be over to Cheltenham to join John Duggan, gallivanting Kevin Coban. We'll talk to James Downey about the Six Nations on Saturday, Ireland versus England. We've got my old international teammate, Alan Judge, club teammate, I should say, not international. He's hoping to add to his international caps, and you'll hear a little bit of that later on. As always, you can watch the show on YouTube, Twitter and Facebook. And the guest ticket today has gone to the hottest tipster in the building, by all accounts, for Cheltenham.
I don't know by what account this is. Maybe my own account, you know, blowing my own trumpet there a little bit earlier on. So I had this kind of top class technique of how to do betting good, and that was basically take our betting expert John Duggan, write down his tips, and then take out the Irish Examiner and see what Ruby Walsh is tipping in there.
And if they match,
go for it. The first two on the first day, they both gave an each way bet. They both won. Yesterday they crossed over on one bet, on an each way bet, and that placed. So today I was very excited. I was like, got all John Duggan's tips, opened up the Irish Examiner, completely different set of tips. So unfortunately I'm not Ireland's hottest tipster today.
Where do you go with that then today?
Well,
see what John has to say.
Yeah, exactly, see what John has to say. Also, Michael Verney in the Irish Independent is having an extremely hot week. He is on fire at the moment, so I've taken a tip from him in Maldini in the 5:30. Now Patrick Mullins seems to be pretty hot is the adjective right now, on Bacardi's in the 3:30, also an each way bet. I'm not a fan of the each way bet, you know.
You're not a fan?
No, I am.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because I'm not a big better. I like that kind of safety blanket. You know, I don't
Lee Westwood was on yesterday. I don't know if you've seen him. They grabbed him in after the... How many races in a day at Cheltenham? Is it six?
Seven? Yeah.
What was it? Okay. Well, he'd had eight winners in a row. He won every race in Cheltenham on the Tuesday. They grabbed him in after the first race on the Wednesday, in for a little... You know, on their coverage, they have like a little desk with all the online
social
media. Yeah, that's the one. And he had eight winners in a row at Cheltenham. I think he was up about 25 grand.
Lee Westwood.
Lee Westwood, who, by the way, his gear was nothing short of disgusting. He had a matching rascal tweedy cap with a jacket, but it was loud. It was very, very loud.
Eight
winners in a row.
That is absolutely insane. How have I not heard about this?
Yeah.
Lee Westwood. Check it out. We need to get him on the show.
Yeah, let's get him. Tommy, can we get Lee Westwood on, please? Before we move on to Champions League football, how was your little trip to New York? Because myself and Tommy were here holding the fort.
Yep.
You know, the solid citizens of Off the Ball, and you were off gallivanting in New York with the lads.
Yeah, I heard you improved the fort, actually. That's what I heard.
I don't know about that.
I heard a sponsor.
How was the trip, all right?
Very good, yeah, very good. A big shout out to Floyd's of Brooklyn, the greatest pub I've ever been in, because inside in this place they had a bocce court. Are you familiar with what bocce is?
Pardon my ignorance.
It's essentially bowls. Let's just say it's bowls. So you walk into a pub.
You're not capturing me here.
And there's like a little sand track down the back of the pub. Like, what the hell is going on here? And there's really competitive people playing bocce. We get involved. I was told to feck off because I was
so
bad at it.
No.
But Adrian Barry was the king of bocce. I'm sure he'll be able to tell you himself when he's got the golden
ticket. Played it before, obviously.
He probably has, yeah. It's probably a big thing in Westmeath. Certainly, where I'm from, I've never heard of bocce before. I had to Google it.
Well, but where you are from, Gaelic football is a big...
Oh, yeah. There was definitely no Gaelic football.
Last weekend, no?
I have no idea what game you're talking about. It's
Super Dubs again. Super Dubs.
Really, yeah. I must...
Strolled to victory.
I might Google that. No, I'm not interested in talking about that sort of thing.
Right, come on, we'll move on to Champions League.
Yeah.
We'll start with Man United. Go out to Sevilla. Again, a disappointing performance. Result, obviously. After the first leg, and he got a lot of criticism. The away leg, 0-0. After that, domestically, good couple of comebacks against Chelsea, against Crystal Palace. Obviously, the victory over Liverpool on Saturday. And then the manner of this defeat, the performance levels, the energy levels, the team selection. I'm struggling to think of what was right with that game from a Man United point of view. It was so wrong. And again, he's getting criticised heavily in a lot of quarters. Not too long after signing a new contract, by the way. It's not a good time there, is it?
It's absolutely appalling. The worrying thing about it is that you go back a few weeks and you go back to the first leg of the Sevilla game and you think to yourself, right, this is clearly a systemic failure here. Jose Mourinho's tactics aren't working. He clearly hasn't gone for it. And these really talented players are suffering as a result. But what was very worrying about the second leg was that the players have clearly lost all their ability as well. I mean, that Paul Pogba pass straight out of play kind of summed up the entire thing. Alexis Sanchez seems to have lost whatever talent he did have at the start of the season, and it seems that he, it kind of proves the theory that he was really angling for that move away from Arsenal when he was scoring a couple of goals. His performance level seemed to have regressed a little bit again. Lukaku looked brilliant on Saturday. It was like, finally this guy has arrived as a target man in the Premier League, and was little to, it was pretty much close to ineffectual against Sevilla in the second leg.
We'll get stuck into certain key players, and I want to come back to Pogba, but certainly want to talk to about Fellaini in terms of team. But let's have a little listen to what Jose Mourinho had to say after the game.
We have no time to be sad for more than 24 hours, and that's football. That's not the end of the world. I sit in this chair twice in the Champions League, and I knock out Man United at home at Old Trafford. I sit in this chair with Porto, Man United out. I sit in this chair with Real Madrid, Man United out. So I don't think is something new for the club. And of course, being Manchester United manager and losing a Champions League tie at home is a delusion, obviously.
Well, clearly not happy. Something in me just, it makes me feel that he had that ready to say if it didn't go to plan. I think it's nonsense. For a start, you're saying you agree with
completely
that?
Completely agree. And we haven't actually chatted about this before he came on. Completely agree he had that ready to say before he went on air. I feel it's a subliminal message when he says, this is nothing new for United. Like, that says to me that he's saying to the board, this is our standard.
So I'll tell you what else is nothing new for United. The way they're playing now is, it's just, it's boring. When you get the results, you get away with it. When you don't get the results, like the other night. So let's get stuck into it. Okay, team selection from the Saturday. One of the big talking points. Fellaini starts, not match fit. Clearly you could see that. I am not his biggest fan. I've rowed to Kenny Cunningham on numerous occasions about Fellaini, mainly on their Europa League quest last season, where he was effective, and I agree he is effective. He's not a Man United player. For me, he is not a Man United. He's not good enough to be a Man United player. When you play him, the reason I think he played him centre midfield alongside Matic last night was because he felt they would be stronger defensively. Nothing could be further from the truth. His awareness and his defensive instinct just isn't there. And even at a younger age, I think McTominay is actually more astute in terms of defensively orientated, his awareness around him, players rolling off the back of him. It was a strange call by Mourinho to start him last night.
Yeah, completely. I think when you come to that positional awareness, you've got Fellaini and Pogba at the bottom rung, Scott McTominay a little bit above them, and Matic is obviously their best player in that position, and clearly isn't shooting the lights out either, except for that wonder goal against Crystal Palace. And what was odd about it is that you looked at the team sheets before the game, and before we knew that they were going to choke as bad as they did, and you start to think to yourself, wait, Banega and Nzonzi.
Yeah.
They're pretty much a better holding midfield duo than Fellaini and Matic, even before we get into the whole underperforming element of things. Yeah. So when you're coming up against a side who are the fifth best in Spain and they've got a better centre-mid partnership than you, you're in big trouble, especially if you're Manchester United.
Especially with the money they've spent.
Yeah.
And even today, we're looking at the back of the papers. Oh, he's linked with Willian. He wants to sign Willian. You've just signed Sanchez. You're not getting the best out of him. You get the best out of Rashford playing from the left on Saturday against Liverpool. Keep him on the left. For the time being, keep him on the left. Eventually, he will end up as a centre-forward. But for the time being, leave him there. He tweaks that to get Sanchez on the left. He simply isn't getting the best out of a very good squad of players. There's no doubt about that. And you've mentioned Pogba. Pogba coming on, he looks gone. He looks so short of confidence. You spoke about the stray ball. Mentally, he's not right. For whatever reason, he simply isn't right. Whether it's the relationship between him and Mourinho, Sanchez coming in on bigger money, throwing his toys out of pram, we don't know. I'm sick of hearing he needs to play in a three-man midfield.
The left of a three.
I'm sick of it, yeah. I'm done with it. I really am, because is he 24, 25 now? Maybe 25. Just play as a centre midfielder. Shut up about this three-man midfield from the left. Nonsense.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that we don't know what's going on between himself and Mourinho. I thought it was very pointed in the BBC interview on Saturday.
When he joined in.
When he comes over to Mourinho and
it seems like he's playing up to Jose Mourinho as if, like, has there been a conversation there where Jose's like, you got to prove yourself to me, and Pogba's like the nerd at the front of class almost trying to suck up to the teacher.
Yeah.
Is that the sort of relationship that's going on there? Because we don't know. It is very strange. Like, the Marcus Rashford one is a very interesting one as well. I mean, is he starting to look in the mirror and is thinking, when I'm 23, 24, am I going to be as good as I could have been at that age when I started, even under Louis van Gaal? Like, imagine how good Marcus Rashford could be already if he was under Alex Ferguson. Mm. Frank de Boer was completely bang on the money about Marcus Rashford.
He was, spot on. And in terms of, like, him under Mourinho and the way Mourinho sets up a team and his development, you would liken it to maybe Arsenal young players coming through. They show that promise, they show that potential, and then it plateaus. Mm. And I'm not saying that's happening with Rashford, but I think if Mourinho was in charge for the next 2, 3, 4 years, do you think he would really go to that next level? Because he's got everything to be able to go to that next level. His size, speed, his awareness, his attitude seems spot on. It's a tricky little path. I just want to read out a comment we've had in from Jack O'Shea Khan. Feel massively for Lukaku. He got the ball about 5 times and made something of it 4 times. Couldn't get the ball into him. You mentioned he played better against Liverpool on Saturday. He needs to start playing at that level against the big teams more consistently. I feel the criticism on him at times this season has been a little bit unfair in terms of his build-up play, his hold-up play. I personally think it's got better this season.
Yeah, there's also the element of isolation in the Jose Mourinho system, and you do need to be an excellent target man. Like, you could also counter that by saying who was marking him on Saturday and the disaster that he has been all season for Liverpool. So I do think it was an exceptional performance from a target man perspective, which was the first time I feel that we've seen that really from Manchester United. Like, he's obviously banged in a few goals, particularly in the first couple of months of the season, but this was the first time where he's getting up high for the ball, knocking it onto Marcus Rashford, and that's when United...
using that strength.
Yeah, they were really at their best, and it certainly got me rethinking the theory that Liverpool are best primed to challenge Manchester City next season. But then Tuesday night happens and you're back to square one again. You're like, Manchester United are going backwards, and it's very, very hard to tell what Mourinho is thinking right now. What is that message he was trying to send out on Tuesday night when he says that this is our level now? This has happened to Manchester United before. This is just like the Alex Ferguson era. It's not. It's a lot worse, Jose, and I don't know what he's hoping for, because like, at least when it comes to Chelsea, you can at least say, well, they haven't exactly put in the spending power of the likes of Manchester City or United. United, though.
No, I'm getting a bit sick of his nonsense at this stage, and I really am. It's just like, it's one thing after another, throwing his toys out of the pram. He'd done that to get Sanchez in January, where he was saying, we can't compete with Manchester City, and that, you know, the new contract, all that. But look, we'll come back to a bit of Champions League and a bit of football there. But we had AP McCoy on the show last week. Owen, you went here, you were in New York. So let's hear what he had to say on the stairs hurdle.
I'm not sure. I know the 5-year-old, the horse, he's 6 now, see, Sam Spinner was very impressive when the Lomo occurred when he was 5 at Ascot, beat Lammy Surge, and you know what I mean, Harry. Yanworth beat Super Sunday at Aintree over 3 miles. I actually think Yanworth could beat Super Sunday again. Do I think Yanworth will win the stairs hurdle? Not sure, you know. So very, very open race.
If you were going to pick one?
If I was going to pick one, probably Sam Spinner. I think maybe him.
Joining us on the line is John Duggan from Cheltenham. John, thanks for joining us.
Keith and Owen, how are we doing? Are we making money?
Owen is. Apparently Owen's got a formula which involves you and your tips, cross-examining it with some of the key newspapers, seeing what the common denominator is, and he's quids in, John.
Detective Owen Sheehan.
Telling you, he's bang on it. To reveal your formula.
Well, it's very high tech, John. I'm not sure if it's capable of explaining this over this medium when you're not here in studio. But basically, I take your tips and I see if Ruby Wall just tipped them as well. Today, that hasn't happened, unfortunately.
How's it been going over there, John?
And Keith, are you getting involved, Keith, at all? Are you having a flutter at all yourself?
I tell you what, I did yesterday. I got a couple of little tips. I think they stemmed from in and around the office. Tommy's laughing through the window here because the first one I did was a disaster. I can't even remember the name. Dunikov, is it? Dunikov?
Tiger Roll.
No, I didn't have Tiger Roll. I wasn't on that. So yeah, I have been. I was on the sofa all afternoon yesterday. Really, really enjoyed it. I've been on many a time. Fortunately, I can't get there this week, but it's an electric atmosphere. I know you love it over there, John, don't you?
Yeah, 17th year, Keith. So I'm a glutton for punishment. But there is no other race meeting like Cheltenham, as you know, and it's just it's just very hard to describe until you've been here. And once you've been here, you understand what it is about. It's just bigger and better than everything. And it's like any big sporting event. It just has that aura that other sporting events don't. So there's been a lot of rain overnight, 9 millimetres. It's going to be very testing for the horses, the jockeys and the trainers and the punters in different ways. So we're looking forward to a half one start here and to increase the tally of Irish winners. 9 on the board at halfway is really impressive.
We've got to touch on Ruby Walsh yesterday. We heard AP speak about him last week in terms of his road to recovery. That was just cruel what happened to him yesterday, wasn't it?
It was awful, Keith. It's just this is a game, to be very brutal about it, where people have lost their lives. It's a very dangerous sport. And I don't know of another sport where an ambulance follows the participants all around during the action. Ruby Walsh, he's made of iron, as we know, as all these jockeys are, but at 38 years of age, he broke his leg in November. He's 4 months out. He does everything he can in his power to come back to ride at Cheltenham because this is what they live for. He rides two brilliant winners on Tuesday, and then this happens, and it's just very, very unfortunate. And we wish him a speedy recovery and hope he's back for Punchestown. Yeah, it's just not fair.
Yeah, I totally agree. Gordon Elliott had a good day yesterday, 3 winners. Are you anticipating anything similar today for him, or be a little bit tougher maybe today?
Well, Shattered Love, Keith, has been backed in the first race. That's the JLT novices chase, Shattered Love. She's a mare. She will love the ground. She loves bottomless ground. So she's been backed for Gordon into 11-2. He's got Glenlow in this Pretemps handicap hurdle, also for money, 5-1 favourite in the colours of JB McManus. So there's a couple there from Gordon already that have chances. I think Willie will always throw a few as well. He's had 5 winners so far, so we know the yard is flying, and he's got Undeso, the favourite in the Ryanair chase, backed into 11-8 on now with Duvan a non-runner. Paul Townend will now ride Undeso in the absence of Ruby Walsh. Just a couple of other pieces of information. Patrick Mullins rides Bacardi's in the Stairs Hurdle. That's the feature race of the day at 3:30. Robbie Power is now on Salsa Retta in the Mares Hurdle, and Paul Townend has been confirmed to ride Kiltavik in the Gold Cup tomorrow. It's an each way day, guys. It's a lot of big fields, a lot of plots, a lot of uncertainty with the ground. How is this ground going to ride? And that causes uncertainty in terms of predicting what's going to happen.
John, for those people who had kind of today's card marked out before today and had banked on Ruby Walsh riding, do you think that the change to Paul Townend and a couple of horses into a couple of other jockeys, does that really make any marked difference for people who already had their card marked?
Well, I would say the jockeys are very good. That's the first thing. Paul Townend is an accomplished jockey, and he's won around Cheltenham. Robbie Power, who rides the mare, is an accomplished jockey, a Gold Cup winning jockey, and Patrick Mullins knows Bacardi's inside out. So I don't think there's any real worry about the ability. It's just the knowledge of the horse. And I think if there's one horse that Ruby Walsh knows and understands how to ride, it is Undeso in that Ryanair chase. The horse just goes off at 100 miles an hour. It's hold on tight. It's make sure it's like one of those bucking broncos. Make sure you don't fall off. And Ruby managed to get through to the end last year without falling off, and he was a brilliantly impressive winner. The ground is softer this time. So what they don't want with Undeso is for the horse to be too keen and to go off like a mad thing and then blow his chance. So that'll be the only concern out of the ones I've seen in terms of the changes. But Paul Townend knows what he's doing more than you, Owen, I, or Keith.
Yeah, I think he knows a tad more than I do anyway, that's for sure. When it comes to that race, like, would it be fair to say that Q Card would bring the house down, that it would get the biggest Cheltenham roar of the week, should it beat Undeso?
Yeah, I think it would, until Might Bite wins the Gold Cup tomorrow. That'll probably get a big, even bigger roar. But yeah, Q Cardis, I mean, everybody wants to latch on to a favourite, a horse that we all love. We loved Donoli here, we loved Istabrak, we loved Hardy Eustace, we loved even Fleming Star in the last couple of years in Ireland. And we like a people's horse and that we can attach to and actually own, as it were, in inverted commas. And Q Card is one of those. He's been a brilliant horse. He's won the race at the festival before. He started off as a 4-year-old winning a bumper here. Of course, he won the King George Chase, which is one of the best chases. Never won a Gold Cup, has fallen a couple of times in the Gold Cup. But maybe that makes him more... people more sympathetic towards him. He's not a machine. He's human. But he's obviously not human. But in terms of equine terms, you get what I'm saying. You know, he's got frailties and weaknesses like us all. So he's getting on now. He's 12, but he does retain ability, and he ran well at Ascot last time.
John, just finally, I know you do your charity bet. You take a lot of pride in that. How's it going? Give us the update on how that's going.
Well, we have spent 1,000 so far, Keith, and we've 1,376, so we're up about €376. Snow Falcon's actually a non-runner in the first. That was one of the bets. The ones that have gone for today, Bacardi's each way, a 10-1 in the Stairs Hurdle, and there's another one called Final Nudge in the last race. Will love the ground, third in the Welsh National, about 16-1 this morning, has been backed, and I think he might be worth an each way selection as well. But the tips are on offtheball.com.
John, we wish you the best with that and enjoy the rest of the festival. Thanks for joining us.
So you've been
jealous.
Yeah, I was going to say you've obviously sampled this before, so you know exactly what you're missing.
Yeah, I've been there a good few times whenever I've been at clubs in and around it. Probably not even in and around there. I remember coming from Blackburn after training to get down. I think we missed the first 2-3 races. Straight in off the training pitch, shower into a car, down 2 or 3 of us. Night in Cheltenham. The atmosphere is electric. Like, John is there for very different reasons. John loves horse racing. I have to be honest, yesterday was one of the first days I actually really enjoyed sitting on the sofa and watching a bit of the racing yesterday. But it's I have been a few times. If I ever bring out a book, which I never ever will, there might be a couple of chapters on Cheltenham, because it's just an amazing place. So I'll give you one little story. I've told you this anyway. We were there 1 year, and a friend of mine, who will remain nameless, came back. We were in a box with a team. I can't remember what team we were at the moment, because I played on two clubs. Anyway, doesn't matter. He come back from the toilet, panting, out of breath, screaming at the lads, lads, lads. And we thought there was something obviously up with him, or he's saying something. Right. He said, lads, we need to call the RSPCA. There's someone out there whipping a horse. He's basically implying he didn't even know there was horse racing going on.
That's almost like an anomaly for Cheltenham. I mean, it's something that you'd hear in Aintree or something like that, but Cheltenham, they always say, well, it's a very knowledgeable crowd. You know, you don't always get that at like the World Cup or at All-Ireland finals, but at Cheltenham, the pinnacle of the sport has the pinnacle of the fans.
Yeah, I thought, well, it certainly wasn't always the case when I went anyway. But we're going back next year. We're in the show from there next year, aren't we, Tommy? Yeah, we are.
That's the plan, yeah. Well, I'll hold down the fort while you're away that time. You know?
You've never been then?
Never been to Cheltenham, no. I have been advised, and I'm not sure, is it my friends who know a little bit more about racing than I do, patronising me, but they say, you'd probably prefer Aintree, which says to me, you know, you prefer the crack of Aintree rather than
comparison.
Like, I want to hear the Cheltenham roar in real life. Yeah. Like, that's one of those sporting bucket list things. So, absolutely, I want to go. I don't want to go and, you know, have all that charity money kind of and all that pressure on me like John Duggan is. Yeah. I'd rather go as a punter, you know, or, you know, we could do the Keith Andrews show from there. And I think
that's the one. You want the golden ticket for that, don't
you? Yeah, I looked at the golden ticket schedule. I think I happen to be on the golden tickets around Paddy's
Middle of March next 2019.
So, you know, I will just do the good thing and I'll go over and we'll do Stairs Day that day.
Well, speaking of punters, we're trying to get Kevin Kilbane on the line. Kev, are you there? We got him.
Hi, lads.
How are you, buddy?
Oh. Yeah, what's the crack?
Oh, you look very sharp.
You know, I've got to make an effort sometimes. I'm trying to keep up with you, you know.
Listen, come here. You made your way over, flight over, early flight, down from Birmingham. Did you smooth a couple of corporate tickets? You did, didn't you?
I'd be telling a lie if I said no. That's all I'm saying, yeah. I managed to get a couple of decent seats today, a decent spec chair, so that's what I've managed to do. I've got a decent spot. It's not too bad, and I'm looking forward to the day's racing, yeah, so it's not too bad, yeah. Bristol it was. I flew into Bristol, actually, as well.
Oh, did you? Come on, hit me with what's your bets of the day. It's a bit tougher today than yesterday, by all accounts, on the novice, as you know.
I think the word here is terrible on the first, in the first, that's the one that I'll probably be back in the first race. I think Undersow is what they're all saying here, certainly. I think there's that one, the big hot pot, the double is Undersow and Lorena. That's the big double for the day. And it's Maldini in the last race. That's the other one as well. That's where mine could be going today, yeah.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
He was a good player, wasn't he?
I wasn't bad, yeah. Not as good as you, Keith, but he was decent, yeah.
Maldini is one of the horses that's come up in my tactic plan B today. So that's definitely a good tip. I'll give you that advice on that one, Kev. The other one that I'm looking at today is Bacardi's Each Way in the Stairs. What's your take on that horse?
Bacardi's, do you know what, honestly, Owen, every single person that I spoke to today here is literally just talking about the ground. So any of the big favourites that have been thinking about here, I think Undersaw is one that certainly goes on the ground. I think what they're saying about Lorena goes on the ground. I think in the stage it's going to be a really, really difficult one to, you know, I say a difficult one to predict, but I think the ground is affecting so many of the better horses, and I think that's what's going to go against so many of the of the big ones that we're actually looking at? Are you thinking of backing coming here today? I think it changes your perception coming here when you're certainly speaking to the guys that's around the track here today as well, telling you that look, the ground is seriously bad, and you're looking for. I think today's a day for look to alternatives. It's very, very small bets. Keep your powder dry. Fivers. Two 250s each way. That's all it's about, Keith. Don't go big, Owen. That's what it's about today.
Kev, you go big, you go home today. That's the message I'm going to give you.
No, well, do you know what it'll be? I'll be keeping to that until I get to the third or fourth race. If I'm losing, then it's go big. Then I'll probably lose again. Then it'll be go even bigger. And that's how my day will probably go today. Yeah, so I'll end up either being maybe slightly up or maybe breaking even, or I'll be very much down, yeah.
Just in terms of what happened yesterday, obviously there was Ruby Walsh news, but also that Sam Crowe win. Did you happen to have any money on that horse by any chance?
That seems like a leading question, that, Owen, actually. But yeah, I think you're not. I backed Sam Crowe quite a long time ago.
What price did you get, Kev?
September, October. I got a decent price initially to win any race at 5-1, 6-1, I think it was, actually got any race, and then I actually backed it at 7-2 to win any race at Cheltenham. So I was kind of covering me back on a couple of things here, really. So that's kind of how I did it. I think in general, I've done it in a couple of doubles here and there. So I managed to win a few quid, Owen, yeah, on Sam Crowe yesterday. I backed Tiger Roll yesterday, so I managed to win a few quid.
Tell you what, it's no surprise you've gone corporate today, then, is there?
Well, sometimes you've got to spread the love. That's what it is, you know. What's the old saying? It's about sharing the love, sharing the wealth. I think that's what it is. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Give a little back.
Listen, make sure you get yourself into the Guinness Village and have a couple for me, please.
I've actually just been down there. I've had a couple of pints already down there, just in the last hour. So now I'm kind of relaxing now. I'm getting in
so
racing.
Jealous.
We'll see how it goes.
So jealous. Listen, thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it. Have a good day, right?
All right, lads. Take it easy. Have a good day. See you, boys.
See you, pal. So jealous.
So jealous.
So jealous. I seriously can't tell you how jealous I am.
I know.
More jealous, and you know how much I love New York, more jealous of that. And you've been in New York last week.
Yeah, well, I guess we weren't Skyping you from New York, kind of showing you the...
I've seen the crappy quiz.
Oh, yeah.
It was a very crappy quiz last week.
It was very crappy, yeah.
Wasn't it?
The host in particular was terrible.
Yeah.
I was more jealous of Cheltenham last year.
Why?
Because of the weather. Like, last year was a scorcher, wasn't it? It was all these fancy drone shots going over the ground and everybody with the shades on and
jackets over the shoulder. They couldn't have the drone yesterday, could they, with the wind?
Yeah, exactly. You probably couldn't put a drone up there, yeah. So it's a bit of a mud fest, but I'd imagine that has little to no impact on the festivities going on over there.
He's a lucky man, that Kevin Caban. Lucky man. Right, we're going to get over now. I spoke to Alan Judge a little bit earlier in between his training session. He was in the gym in between going out on the pitch. He took a little bit of time out. Here's what he had to say. Joining me on the line now is Alan Judge, my former Blackburn Rovers teammate, playing for Brentford and just got his call up for Ireland. Alan, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Nice to hear from you, Keith, again.
Right, talk to me. You're doing us a favour here. You've just come out of the gym, haven't you, in preparations. You're dodging in between sessions at Brentford. Been in the gym, you got training later on.
Yeah, just doing my little bits extra, you know, for my leg before I get started, you know, just to keep the power up in there and get a lot more strength into it. You still have to do a lot of it.
Tell us a little bit about it, the injury. Because if we bring people back, it was April 2016. To paint the picture, you were flying in the championship. I think you scored 14 goals in 38 games. There was talk of moves to Newcastle. You just had your first cap for Ireland against Switzerland, and then this horrendous leg break against Ipswich Town, wasn't it? How did that feel at the time, and could you imagine that it would take you 20 months to get back from that?
No, to be honest with you, as you said there, I was on top of the world at the time. You know, I'd done what I've always wanted to do. I'd play for Ireland, I'd come back with even more confidence going into the two games before against Forest, and I think it was Wigan playing great, and then 2 minutes into the next game, there you go, tackle happens. To be honest with you, when it happened, all I thought about was my family. It was the strangest thing. You just automatically think, my family, I have the two kids. Jackson was only 4 months old at the time. So obviously I was thinking everything about them. I knew it was broke the minute the tackle happened. So it was just funny. It was just a flash about my family straight away. And it wasn't until, you know, 2 or 3 days later after I had the op and I realised how long I was going to be.
And it's certainly been the most difficult period, I would imagine, in your career. Tell us, because look, you'd have seen me maybe at Blackburn when I was out with long term, and you see players in the gym.
daily grind. I don't think you can really put yourself in that position and imagine what it's like until you're there, can you?
No, and with the way it's work here, because obviously, as you know yourself, you've got the fit players, they come first at the time. Not on purpose, but the way it is, you have to get the fit players out and train. So I would come in probably about quarter to 8 o'clock, do my own little stuff first. The lads would come in around quarter to nine. They would get ready. I would have breakfast while they're getting ready. They would go out to train. Then I would get my bit of treatment, and then they're coming in. I'm going to get lunch. I didn't see them.
Yeah, you're literally on opposite timetables, aren't you?
Everything, and totally understand that. It's not the physio's fault. They need to be available for everybody, as you know yourself. So that was the difficult part, is that I didn't even see them. I didn't even see anybody for 9-10 months until I got back out on the pitch first time. But obviously it didn't feel 100% right, and then I went through that again. But lucky enough, after the second operation, it went quicker. I was out in the field quite quick. I was back around the lads fairly quick.
Did you know straight away, second time around, that it was better? It just felt right.
Within 6 weeks of it, I was back walking. My wedding was coming up, so I made a beeline that no matter what, I was walking down that, you know, I was walking on the day of that wedding. And it just felt so much better. You know, still took time. I had a good trip out to Philadelphia. I went and saw Bill Knowles, who was a specialist, and had a good 2 weeks there, came back good, and I kicked on from there. Really, from August on, I was out on the pitch, but obviously I'm coming to now, I think it is, well, we're in March, and I'm still getting fit.
How do you feel? So you've come on in nine games for Brentford since the start of January, so they've obviously been easing you back in. How is the fitness at the moment? How's your sharpness?
Physically, I feel good. I feel so much better. I'm actually physically a better condition than I was before I got injured, which you would expect after having nearly 2 years out. But, you know, there's nothing like starting a game. You know, I'm coming on, I'm getting 15 minutes here and there, 20 minutes. I know I can do 15, 20 minutes now. I'm looking for that taste of a start of a game to see where I can get to.
Yeah.
And this isn't being smart or anything. The only person you have to ask is the manager why, you know, I'm just waiting, I'm biding my time, I'm being patient, I'm not knocking on the door. So hopefully it'll come soon.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. Look, in terms of knowing you the way I do, it's obviously great, and actually in terms of you just want to play. You've always been that type of player. You've never been one to just stay at a certain club, maybe because it's a bigger club. You've always wanted in your career, haven't you, to get out and play games and play regularly.
Exactly. That's why I left Blackburn the second time. You know, I went back, I got told I was playing. The minute I knew I wasn't going to be playing, straight off onto the play again. I'm not one to sit around. So, but I understand I am coming back from a major injury. So, I just have to be patient, which I feel I am. I'm hopefully my chances are just around the corner.
Tell me how big of an incentive. I remember reading something about you trying to get back for the October international games against Wales and in the playoff against Denmark. That obviously didn't happen. How big of an incentive then was it to try and get ready for these friendlies in March against Turkey?
Major, obviously you don't want to be setting time limits on yourself, but obviously you see things coming up and you're like, I'm progressing well in training, I'm doing well. Obviously ultimately I wasn't there in October. You know, I was out on the pitch, I was training, I was doing everything, but I just needed time, everything just to kind of, you know, wake up again. You know, it's not just your leg that has to wake up, it's all the other muscles in your body as well. So but this is major. You know, when I saw my name get named in the provisional, like I was surprised, but you know, it was great. And
just because of the lack of game time you've had, maybe
probably just because of that. But I think I've shown I'm fit. I think the fears of people thinking, does he have a hangover from the injury? Obviously, I'm yet to start a game, but I think people just want to see me run around, and I think I've shown that. Obviously, I've had the leg injury, but thank touch wood, I haven't had any little niggles yet. So
I know you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself. I know you're talking about the game time, and that will undoubtedly come. There's no doubt in my mind, certainly with your ability. In terms of this transitional period that we're having with the Irish team, certain players will retire. We've seen the players that Martin's named in the provisional squad. Do you see this as a big opportunity to stake a claim in that squad?
Yeah, I do. Obviously, Wes is retired, and I'm not saying me and Wes are the same, but I think we're a bit of the same mould in that case, that we do like to get on the ball, move around the pitch freely, and I'm just hoping I come in, if I get picked in the squad, come in, show a bit and train that I'm all good and I'm all well. You know, pre-season in the summer is going to be massive for me. I'm not stupid to think that I'm going to just turn on like a light switch straight away. You know, I need a good pre-season behind me, and I really think everybody will see the best of me again starting next season.
Well,
it's about building me up now.
Yeah, and it was so cruelly, to, like we've already mentioned, in terms of your first cap, got that on top of the world. The Euros were on the horizon. So during, I always felt when I was injured, I needed something to motivate me, no matter what that was. It might have been a manager that maybe didn't fancy it, an upcoming Ireland game, no matter what it was. But in terms of that being taken away from you, we've seen it with Wes. I didn't get my opportunity until my late 20s. So
exactly,
Martin knows your abilities. He's had you in the squad. He's named you in this one as soon as you're available. That must give you a lot of confidence.
That when I seen that just gave me like a sudden uplift, you know, because obviously I haven't made a start here, but seeing my name in that squad, and I'm thinking, Martin must like something about me. Gave me a great confidence. And when I've always gone with the Irish team, I've always really enjoyed doing the training there. You know, no one holds back. You have to show what you can do. So hopefully I'm looking forward to it again. As I said, this is probably the most frustrating time through the injury, because you're on the verge of everything, of you're coming on, but you want to start games.
Mentioned Wes's retirement. I think that certainly opens up a gap in terms of an attacking midfielder. I do think you're a little bit different, but I do think you're very different to what we have within that squad, and I think you can bring something maybe extra in certain areas of the pitch.
Yeah, well, as I said, that's what I'm hoping. I think mostly where I've gone and played, I've had the freedom to roam around the pitch. You know, it suits me. It's the best way for me. But obviously, you go in there, the manager wants you to play a certain way, that's fair enough, but I wouldn't want to take away from my own game. You know, you look at James McLean, he's great at getting up and down the pitch and what he's done for us in the last year. So I would say I'm a bit different to him. As I said, I like to roam the pitch and hopefully get a few passes together. So everybody's different, and hopefully I can bring my little bit to the team if selected.
I'm sure you will, I've no doubt about it. Talk to me a little bit about the championship. You know, I'm over most weekends. I'm a huge fan of the championship. You're 11th in the table, 8 points behind Middlesbrough, who you face on Saturday. You lost against Cardiff on Tuesday night. It's still there, Fizz. It's going to be difficult, but I would imagine you're still focused on trying to just bridge that gap between yourselves and Middlesbrough in sixth.
Yeah, I think this is probably one of the defining games this weekend. This is a big game, whether you stay in touch or not. I think we have to win, you know, because I think Middlesbrough are sixth at the moment, are they?
Yeah, sixth, 8 points.
So if they beat us, they pull away, that's 11 points, 10, whatever it is. We need to win, and that's the only thing on our mind. And the lads, they'll be pretty focused on us, on trying to get the win on Saturday. It won't be easy, because they've got a very good team. So we'll be trying our best on Saturday.
Who's impressed you this season? We've seen Wolves for the vast majority of the season play expansive, really good football to watch, individual brilliance. I know they've spent a lot of money. And then we've seen, say, for instance, Cardiff, who are looking likely now to get that second automatic spot, who you faced during a real stark contrast in styles in terms of a real physical side. Who's impressed you this season?
Well, obviously Wolves have impressed massively. I know they've spent a lot of money, but the players have gelled fairly, very quick, which, you, to be fair, you would expect with that quality that they brought in, you would expect that. But Cardiff the other night, you know, people say they don't play the best football. Well, I tell you one thing, they get the ball into the box and they know what they're doing when they get it in there. And then my favourite, and I, Brentford fans probably wouldn't want it, is Fulham.
I knew you were going to say
watching,
that.
I'm watching Fulham at the minute. I just think they're going to pip second.
Do you?
Just with the way they're playing football.
Pip Cardiff, or can you see Wolves maybe dropping out?
No, I think Wolves will stay there. I just think something about Fulham, with the way they're playing, you know, they got Tom Kearney right back at the right time, and Mitrovic has come in and made a massive difference. And then Sawyers has gone there as well. And they've got a lot of attacking options, you know, and I think they play, with us, probably the best football in the league.
Yeah.
Wolves.
Look, I'm a big fan of them as well. I'm also a big fan of your team, and I'm absolutely itching for you to get back in the team. As you know, listen, I really appreciate you taking the time. I'll be looking forward to seeing you hopefully get that second cap on the board next week against Turkey. Thanks for taking the time, Alan.
Fingers crossed. Appreciate that, Keith. Speak to you soon.
absolute diamond of a lad. He was a young player, young pro at Blackburn when I was there. Always had high hopes for him. His attitude was always impeccable. His size probably went against him at times in terms of certain styles of play, not suited to it. Always wanted to go out and play, was never content just being at a club, being at a big club, being at a Premier League club, wanted to go and forge his career. He's had to go drop down to come back up. And I do think he will get an opportunity in a green shirt.
That's a good sign that he doesn't settle for that contentment of just being a Premier League player, because to a certain extent you see it with Championship teams. Once they get promoted, there is kind of certain stagnation that's quite often, it's not only the step up in standard, but there's a complete overhaul sometimes during the summer before your first season in the Premier League. It's often because of the mentality around the club. It's like we're at the top of the mountain and now you're at the bottom of an even bigger mountain once you go up. But like, what happened at the end of his Blackburn career? Was it just not getting...
Just wasn't getting in.
The pathway wasn't there.
I think he maybe left under Sam Allardyce, so he's obviously not going to fit into that style of play. I remember trying to get him to MK Dons when I wasn't there because I rated him that highly. I felt it would suit his game as well. His best position for me is as a number 10, and he's an energetic type of number 10. He will run in beyond. That's what I mentioned. He's very different to Wes Hoolahan in the way he plays. He's infectious. He's the first one to go and close down. He's just a bundle of energy, and he links up play really, really well.
So you're like that was actually what I was just going to ask about, like the comparisons with Wes, because everybody's kind of now looking for this new spark.
They're very different. Very, very different. Wes has more guile to his game, and in terms of that vision, Alan's more explosive.
Yeah,
he covers every single blade of grass, whereas Wes, you know, he's more mercurial. He'd find those little pockets of space and get his head up and look for those passes. Alan Judge will run in beyond. He will link up play very well. He will get it and he will give it, and he's full on.
It seems to me that he would be able to survive and be kind of a fixture of a Martin O'Neill team a lot more than Wes Hoolahan was, and potentially without the ball as well. That's a key part of his game, the closing down. This is a big comparison to make, but the Bobby Firmino type of without the ball play, albeit in a number 10 role. But obviously, everybody's rooting for him, kind of more so after that injury.
Especially 20 months out, long time, showed a lot of bottle to get back for, so we genuinely wish him the best of luck. We've got a little comment in from Kieran O'Donoghue, heading to Antalya this day week. Hoping to see Alan get a good run over there. Best of luck, Alan, great player, totally agree. So hopefully he gets an opportunity next week. Good to see him back. Right, let's move on now. We'll chat a little bit about Championship. I know you're a big fan, aren't
you? Huge fan.
You're a big fan. Wolves have been going through a little bit of a hiccup. There's no doubt about that. I was at the game last week when they played Villa. Really struggled second half. But in terms of coming back and bouncing back well, they played Reading on Tuesday night. Villa went the other way, lost at home to QPR. You would imagine that top two is set in stone now, and you've got two really contrasting styles. Wolves, open, expansive style, play three at the back. Matt Doherty is a wing back one side, Douglas on the other. Matt Doherty got two goals here tonight as well. And did he get an assist? No, he didn't get an assist. He should have had an assist. Benik Afellay missed one. So he'll be coming into this Ireland squad full of confidence
no
as well.
No question.
Cardiff, Neil Warnock, 7 promotions, being there, done it, all the rest. So different. You heard Alan Judge talk about it. They get the ball in the box every single opportunity. They are so effective at what they do. It is frightening. I think they've won 7 on the bounce now. And other teams have had a little bit of a wobble up. Them, Fulham and Villa up until Tuesday night at home to QPR have been flying, but just not quite enough to catch Wolves, who had that 15-point gap going back to January.
Yeah, you look at the 7-point gap between Cardiff and Aston Villa. It's not 9 games left in the season, so still plenty of opportunity for Cardiff to mess it up. Mm. If I'm running Cardiff City right now, you get promoted, sack Warnock. Do a Watford on it.
Just sign the new deal. Doesn't matter, sack him.
Doesn't matter. You're going to get the big TV money. Mm. What'll Neil Warnock achieve for you? Maybe, by the skin of your teeth, survive relegation. Mm. You're probably going to sack Neil Warnock in November anyway. So you may as well sack him now. Once you get promoted, sack Neil Warnock.
You're
Just be done with him. Like, what have you seen from him in the Premier League that it's like, other than maybe, did he survive 1 year, 2 years with Sheffield United? If even?
Not sure.
I can't recall. Yeah,
his record isn't great in the Premier League.
It ended in tears eventually.
Yeah.
But just on the Wolves point, like, obviously, this attacking style that they have. It's so good to watch, and it's something that'll probably hold their own with a little bit more pragmatism in the Premier League, but it's what's going on behind the scenes. Like, it's very easy to just kind of talk about agents now and associate players with agents, and that's why certain players are moving to certain clubs. But there's a lot of other stuff happening in football today with regards to players behind the scenes, big political movers and stuff like that. And it seems that the hierarchy in Wolves are very well connected, that if they want to make a move happen, within reason, they will make that happen.
Well,
they
it's
will
jealousy, isn't it, in terms of the other teams? And it's only come out now because of where Wolves have found themselves. Top of the league, looking very likely to go to the Premier League. And you're right, they have utilised those connections very, very well. Are they paying market value for these players, the likes of Ruben Neves, Diego Jota, Bonatini, who they've brought in on loan? Jota's is now a permanent deal. They made that permanent in January. Probably not. Is there player ownership issues going on? Who knows? But they've utilised well. But it's not as if it hasn't gone on previously. And just briefly on the running of a football club, and when I go and analyse games, so for instance, Brentford against Cardiff the other night, Cardiff portrayed that they don't pay big money. They just bought Gary Medine in January for £6 million. Gary Medine, before this season, had scored 9 championship goals in his career, and I think he's 27 years of age. They have got money. They do spend money. There's players there on big, big wages. Brentford, such a well-run football club. They run it on a bit of a formula in terms of the recruitment. There's a lot of statistics involved in how they recruit players, but the wage structure is very much in place. The style of play has remained, even though there's a managerial change. Dean Smith has been there now probably a couple of years, signed a new contract. Very, very well run club. And for them, the achievement is top half. Yeah. That's a massive achievement for a club like Brentford. So there's so many different clubs in the Championship that are running different ways. I find it a fascinating league. I really do.
It is. I guess with Brentford, though, is the upshot a little bit smaller than Wolves. You can make incremental gains, and as long as there's patience from the fans, you can then move your way up into the playoff spots and then into the promotion playoffs, because they've had top half finishes before, and ultimately it hasn't been this quantum leap that some would expect from, you know, the FC Midtjylland model, which is obviously employed in Brentford. So it's an interesting one, but it's always a crazy one in terms of the narratives of the season, that everybody was hyped about Wolves from the first month of the season, and it's always inevitable that there's a collapse involved in the Championship, but they haven't collapsed too dramatically. They've gone through bad spells.
Yeah.
And then you look at the other element of that, particularly when it comes to the playoffs. Anybody who makes a late surge and kind of get that, whatever, third or fourth seed and end up bringing that momentum in, like Preston could be a candidate for that. I know it's a long shot now, but they've got Shawnee Maguire back. I mean, there's certain elements of momentum coming back there, and if they manage to sneak a sixth spot in the Championship, I mean, that would be some story.
That would. I think they're on the only team that are slightly out of sorts at the moment, that Derby County. Middlesbrough are on a bit of a surge with Tony Pulis. Fulham are flying, and Villa doing well. I know they slipped up the other night. I think it'll finish as it is in terms of the playoffs as is. I don't think there will be that team coming from nowhere that we've seen maybe in certain years gone by to ghost into the playoffs, full of momentum, full of confidence, and fly.
Like, let's say if it's now, Villa against Middlesbrough, Fulham against Derby, they're two cracking encounters for the playoff semi-finals. Like, the division is obviously getting better and better because the Premier League is getting better and better.
It's a knock-on effect. It's Premier League,
too. It is, yeah. So it's an amazing thing. And, like, I think this is the... It's almost like a baseball or the NBA season, where it's like the end of the year is when you want to start following the Championship, get to know these teams a little bit more before the playoffs, because it's a great series.
We've got Chris Hughton on Off the Ball tonight with Nathan Murphy. He plays Manchester United in the FA Cup quarterfinals at the weekend. What a job he has done.
Yeah.
At Brighton, seriously, so impressive. Just gets about his work. It's a club that I have got a soft spot for. I really do. Spent the year on loan there. Got a lot of time for the people at the football club, and he very much echoes the people that run the club. Nothing flash about it. Just gets on with his work. The recruitment is good, and the fact that they've got themselves away from that bottom three when at one stage was looking a little bit perilous. Full credit to him.
Absolutely, and also the dignity with which he carries himself, and particularly the amount of interviews he's done for us, and I'm sure every single time he comes on, he's almost quizzed about certain elements of his career where he got screwed over a couple of times in his career, and the dignity with which he kind of doesn't talk about that or gives a very humble response and is like, that's football, and gets on with his life and his career and puts things into perspective is incredibly impressive. He's the guy you root for the most in the Premier League. Any neutral, I can't, like, and it's not even just to do with the Irish angle. it is just any neutral in the Premier League. It's like Chris Hughton is a man you can definitely stand behind. Like him and Sean Dyche really are probably the two neutral favourites, and maybe Eddie Howe to a certain level. So it's great. No. Like Manchester United, you would say they're there for the taking, but Jose Mourinho has really pinned his colours to the masts now after after his post-match interview on BT, when he's like, well, Liverpool don't have the FA Cup and we do, which is like a parody of a quote. So they're going to have to beat Brighton at the weekend.
We're going to move on now, going to chat rugby as Ireland head into trying to slam home the Grand Slam on Saturday at Twickenham. Joining us on the line is my old school teammate, James Downey. James, thanks for taking the time.
No problem, Keith. How are you?
I'm good, pal. I'm good. You're with Owen as well. Right, we need to start with a certain Mr. Eddie Jones' comments. Now, I was infuriated by this, and I don't play rugby. I'm thinking of Gareth Southgate coming out like that and saying something, and I'm playing England on Saturday. How will have that gone down amongst the rugby lads?
Look, I think it's going to be one of those scenarios where, look, you know what Eddie Jones is like. He's an extremely frustrating individual, isn't he? It's nearly the team talk to a certain degree. I don't think they're going to focus on it too much. They'd be too professional for that, I guess. But look, it's gonna hurt when he comes out with ridiculous comments like that. The guy grates me completely. I do think he's a good coach, but as a person, sometimes when people say these things, it's kind of ridiculous, isn't it, in this day and age? But it's the type of person he is. So it's a small thing, it's a side thing, and again, is it another deflection for him to take stuff off his players? He's very good at the smoke screens, but I think it's only a small little thing for the players, to be honest, because once they're out in the field, they're going to have to switch off and do the job at hand. It's more him distracting and deflecting, I think.
The team has just been announced, the England team. Seven changes in come two of your former teammates, Elliot Daly and Dylan Hartley, comes back in to captain the side. What will Elliot Daly bring to this England team?
I presume Elliot's got on the wing there, has he?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, look, Elliot's a class player. I think I was kind of hoping he'd be out. Dylan, not so much. I didn't think he'd have too much of an impact because I actually think Jamie George is playing extremely well. But Elliot brings in that different firepower. He's got that big, long-range left boot as well. And I think that any penalties conceded, look, this game's going to be very small margins. So any small penalties that they can go for, I think that Elliot Daly is a person who can actually step up and boot. But he's got an eye for a gap. He's one of these players who you want to get the ball in the hands. He had a great Lions tour as well. So he's been unlucky with injuries this year with Wasps. And I'm sure he'll be flying, looking forward to getting on the field.
One of the big talking points from the team, James, is that Owen Farrell is back at 10. And I guess it was kind of making ends meet to a certain extent with him being pushed out to 12 so far over the last year or so. Like, how big a difference is it from open play that Farrell is now playing in the 10 role?
I think you kind of look at the way George Forbes plays. When he struggles with front football, England don't look good, as they did against France. And I think that Farrell in there controls it. He can be physical if he has to. He can carry if he has to. I think it's a better balanced side with Farrell at 10. If you've got Farrell 10, I'm presuming that's Ben Teo and Jonathan Joseph, which is a really good balance actually to the midfield. And that's what I was hoping but I thought they'd go for. But Farrell just controls everything really, doesn't he? They do normally play with their two first receivers, but I still think that Farrell overall is a way better player, and he's going to get his hands in the ball nice and early, and he's going to keep that Irish defence honest. But for me, he controls things a lot better than George does, and just adds a little bit more bite to him. And I think it's going to be a very physical game, and I think that it's not one for Ford.
Moving on to the Ireland team, I think it's due in the next 20 minutes or so. What are you anticipating in terms of the changes that maybe Joe Schmidt might make, and in particular the second row?
Honestly, I don't think he's going to make a change. I think the impact that Henderson had was good as well. I think he'll stick with Devon in there. And I think that James Ryan's playing out of his skin at the moment, and he's certainly been one of the form forwards. But I don't think he's going to change the team at all from the last day, if I'm honest. I think Jordy Murphy did enough as well from the bench. Maybe the only interesting or call would be Jordan Larmour. How confident are people in throwing him in there if Rob Kearney goes down after 5 minutes in the cauldron that Twickenham's going to be at the weekend? But it was interesting he played fullback there at the weekend or got 5 minutes, 10 minutes. But that'd be the only kind of contentious thing. But I still think he's going to stick with Larmour. And going back to the second rows, very happy with Devon and with James Ryan. And again, how bad is it to have Ian Henderson coming on off the bench?
What would Joe have been working on mostly this week, do you think, in the build-up to this game and his coach and staff? Would the line-outs be one area of concern?
To be honest, I think, look, most of the work is done now. I guess if you're just looking at how we're going to target the English, it's got to be breakdown. That's got to be a key area. Okay, line-out, yeah, of course, you got to win your own set-piece ball, but for me, it's at the breakdown. The English get very frustrated. Even Sam Simmons came out and spoke about how frustrated he was with the breakdown, and the team are getting that way. So I think Ireland will really put the right numbers in there coming on this weekend.
How impressed have you been with Ireland in midfield this year? Like, you know yourself, in terms of playing with different midfield partners, like, it's obviously a very difficult thing to do, and we're on to, like we've gone through several different midfield partners, and each one seems to have a level of cohesion that is very rare to see in a brand new midfield partnership.
Yeah, it can be quite frustrating for people because you kind of get to learn how one person plays. Like, it's going to be very interesting as well when they're all fit and who you have to choose at that stage. And I think if I'm looking down the line, I'd nearly go for the Leinster triumphant of Sexton, Henshaw and Ringrose just because of that cohesion that they have together. But in looking at this game, I think they've gone extremely well. The players that have stepped in, very impressed. Gary Ringrose is, as I say, seamless. And Bundy Aki got credit due to Bundy as well. They all know their jobs. And look, it's just at that international level where standards are so high and they just can react on instinct. And look, they've been in camp long enough now and they would have had different training partners. So it's an impressive outfit that we've gotten. And look, everyone's talked about the strength and depth we've had and no better place than midfield.
Looking forward to it, like you've mentioned, the Leinster triumvirate of potentially being Joe Schmidt's favourite 10-12-13 combination in the future. But does Bundy Aki just give us something different when it comes to actually getting involved at rucks? I mean, I'm sure that's a nightmare for a midfielder to have to get involved in that, but Aki seems to be more than willing to do that work.
Yeah, he's one of these lads. He kind of does the grunt work, doesn't he? He does all the hard yards pretty easy, gets involved. I think coming into this weekend, it's a perfect game for him, to be honest. He's an aggressive, abrasive type, and the English are going to have to watch him carefully. And I think that they've nearly played Ben Teo to kind of negate his impact on the game. I think they might try and cancel each other out. But again, he's put a powerful midfielder in to deal with Bundy. But again, I think that aggressiveness, as I say, that abrasiveness that he brings into carrying and into the ruck area is going to be certainly a key factor this weekend, yeah.
James, give us a finally prediction. What do you think? How do you think it's going to pan out? Key battles and can we do it?
It's going to be tight. It's like, you'll have certainly earned the Grand Slam to beat the French and the English away. English team hasn't been since Woodward's era, since they've lost three in a row. It's going to be close. It's going to be tight. It's going to be a one-score game, I reckon. Look, it's a game of small margins. I think Ireland will nick it, though, just temperament, just the way that Joe's done this team. I think as well, looking forward, if we want to win on foreign soil and go into a World Cup, we need to win these games. I think we will, just about. Key battles. I think the 10 slot's huge. I know it's an easy one to go for the 10s, but I think if Johnny's on form in his boots, it's going to be a one-score game. So hopefully he can get in there and nick it.
I sincerely hope you're right. James, thanks for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Cheers, guys. Cheers, Keith. Cheers on.
Big game.
Yeah.
Big game. You'll be watching?
Without question. The interesting thing that he said there is, like, it's just worth remembering what year it is, that it's one of the even number years. And even if you said back in 2009, what year do you reckon Ireland will next do a Grand Slam? It could be 2018. I would say no chance. There's no way we're going to do it in an even number year because of the trips to Paris and the trips to London. So it would be an amazing way to do it. Especially, like, I think the Eddie Jones comments are clearly, some people are getting a little bit too wound up about them. They're fairly harmless, but even before the comments yesterday, that came to light yesterday from last year, there is still just a general kind of level of, I would love to see you suffer another defeat to the scummy Irish. So that would just add another layer to it that would just be so blissful and it would be so great. And I think expectations are very high. Like, obviously the championship's in the bag, but what is the reaction going to be? Should we lose in Twickenham? I think there'll kind of be an air of post-Argentina 2015. Maybe not that bad, but certainly an element of, right, okay. Like, obviously in 2015, there was that unbelievable win against France in the pool stages, and everybody was so hyped about that. And then after Argentina, the whole national mood soured considerably. Mm-hmm. I don't think it'll get to that level, as I say, but be prepared for a bit of a backlash should Ireland fail to do it, which is unfair, because they've won a championship.
Exactly. Look, it's, what time is it? It's literally gone 1:30. The first race has just gone off, the JLT Novices Chase at Cheltenham. I need your nap of the day before we leave it.
Oh, nap of the day for me.
Scrambling to
scrambling indeed. Who am I going for nap of the day? I am going for Undeso as my nap of the day.
What race is that in?
That is in the 250. That is the Ryanair.
Was that a John Duggan tip?
It was.
It's John Duggan's, isn't it? It's not yours.
Well, I wouldn't dare John give Duggan's tips that are my own original tips. I would pick it on name or number if that were the case.
John, it's been an absolute pleasure.
I've had a great time. Thank you for having me.
We'll be back again in a few weeks.
Absolutely. And this time next year, Cheltenham, golden
you're
ticket.
In, pal. You're top of the list.
Yeah.
Top
thank you very list. Much.
Thanks for joining us. If you missed anything, you can download it. The Off the Ball website. We'll be back as per usual at 12:30 next week. Good luck.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.